And welcome into the Thursday edition of Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road. Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Hope everybody's doing well and staying safe. Got the weather out there a little bit today, so make sure you're paying attention to that. Joe Rex Road, good morning. How are you?
I'm okay. Sounds like maybe a little bit better than you. Showing some toughness today.
I appreciate it. Michelle, good morning. How are you?
Doing good. Living the dream over here. Yeah, quite windy out there this morning, but I will say on the bright side, there's going to be a high of like 68 degrees today. So we love that as long as the rain chills out.
Yeah, hopefully things stay stabilized on that front. We'll see what happens on that front. We got a lot to get to today here on the program. Tennessee taking down Alabama last night. We'll get into that here in just a few minutes. We'll have Predators assistant coach Dan Hynote coming up at 7:30, looking ahead to the Preds and the Bruins coming up tonight at Bridgestone Arena. And, of course, our weekly visit with Charles Robinson from 8 to 8:30. One small programming announcement, Joe. Jared Stillman, who typically joins us on Thursdays at 7, will now join us on Fridays at 7. So just spreading things out a little bit. Jared will join us on Fridays at 7 o'clock moving forward. So you get a day break.
Yeah, he's going to have to stew. He's going to have to stew on another L, man. It's too bad. Yeah. Too bad, Jared.
Nice. But, yeah. Nice steak dinner for Mark. We appreciate it.
Yes, I feel good for Mark. That was a lot of pressure, but thankfully Jared believed the silly, goofy idea that Chad Brinker is here to give them intel on Aaron Rodgers.
I heard that. All part of a diabolical scheme from Rand Carthon. If so, look, I'll give him credit. That's a heck of a scheme.
That's like Jalen Hurts just dropping the ball on the ground into my arms. You know, I'm Nick Bolton running into the end zone. Thanks, Jared. There's a freebie.
Appreciate your assistance on that, Jared. We'll get a little bit more into that coming up later in the show. Joe, the Vols take down Alabama, the number one team in the country last night. Tennessee wins 68-59 on their home court. It was a game where, honestly, watching it, Joe, you could tell right from the jump, I thought the energy level from Tennessee was where it needed to be. I mean, they wasn't always the cleanest or the prettiest thing out there, but I thought the energy level was where it needed to be. And that's a huge win for Tennessee last night, taking down Alabama on their home court. Obviously, we had talked about the struggles that Tennessee was going through, and you lose two games in a row on buzzer beaters and Vanderbilt, and then it was, with Missouri coming to your house, to have the number one team in the country come in, big win for Tennessee. And you said it yesterday on the show, maybe not great timing for that number one to be next to Alabama, and Tennessee takes them down.
Yeah, I mean, led throughout the game. And just played vintage Tennessee defense, talking about 19 turnovers, 26 points off turnovers, 26 points for Tennessee off turnovers. Alabama had 2 points off turnovers, and Tennessee only turned over 8 times. I was, you know, without Josiah James and Julian Phillips, it was like, man, how is that going to work out? That's the exact kind of player you need, as many of those kinds of guys against Alabama. You know, long, athletic guy, wings as you can possibly have, and they, you know, were missing their top two. So it's really impressive. Jemai, you know, Mayshak, 0 points on the night. You know, the score sheet is not kind to him, but he did a really good job on Brandon Miller when he was on. And Brandon Miller is special. I mean, he had 15 points. We fouled out, and you know, I mean, Zakai Ziegler, 15 points, 8 assists, no turnovers, 36 minutes. And then Vescovi, there you go, two steals. Vescovi, you know, hit some big shots. It was just an all-around really impressive. Jonas Adu came up huge in this game inside, and Plavsic gives you 10 points hitting all 4 shots in 13 minutes. Man, get that guy the ball more. But you know, that's it. Look, Alabama is a national championship contender. Like, everyone would agree with that based on their performance. You can't, like, if you watched the game last night, Tennessee was the better team, and I know it was on their home floor, but yeah, it was a little early to start shoveling dirt on Tennessee.
Well, and without Josiah James in there, Joe, I mean, Miller was held to 15 points. I mean, still a decent night from him, and you could see the ability that he brings to the table out there. But just defensively, I thought Tennessee did a really good job. I mean, you held Alabama to 35% overall shooting the ball, 37.5% from three, which is better than 54% from three or whatever it was the other day when Missouri was out there raining threes out there. Just defensively, a really good performance for Tennessee. I mean, look, offensively for Tennessee, it wasn't like they played great. I mean, they shot 25% from three, 36% from the floor overall, but making enough plays on both sides of the ball to win. And I just wonder what a win like that against a team like that, and I realize it was at home and they've had some big wins already this year, but how much of a confidence boost, or maybe the better phrase would be a reminder of the confidence that they should have with how good they are, could that be for Tennessee with that win?
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, Ziegler said there, it's like you have those two buzzer beaters and it's like, oh man, it could be a totally different position. I mean, they could be right now, in position to now really go after the SEC championship had they not had, some rotten luck last week. And it wasn't just rotten luck, they you got to make free throws and things like that at the ends of games. But those are losses that can send a team spiraling. And when you have those two losses and then you have the schedule Tennessee has coming right up, it's like, man, where is this going to go? So it's a huge response. At The Athletic, we have these little, they do these little briefs, sometimes. And I wrote up a little thing before the game, like the two guys to watch, Jemai Mayshak and Tyree Key. Now, again, Mayshak more defensively, but between those two guys, 1 for 13. Yeah. Key goes 1 for 9. And I'm like, there's no way they win unless he has a big night. Well, he didn't. He goes 1 for 9. And still, Tennessee, and Kamwan goes 3 for 12. So, really, they had a rough night with some really good looks for those guys that weren't falling. You tell me that, and I'm like, okay, that's just not going to be enough. But Alabama will not be anywhere near 59 points. I'm confident in saying this again the rest of this season, wherever it ends for them. They will not be anywhere in that territory. They are a 75, it was like a totally different game for them. That was such a physical in your face performance by Tennessee from the start. And what it does is it changes how it's officiated, right? Yeah. Because it kind of has to. Everyone would have fouled out if they called that game like a normal game. Tennessee said, this is how the game's going to be played from the start. And Alabama couldn't handle it.
They couldn't. So, from the fan base, we've talked about Tennessee's fan base with this team, and it's been pretty interesting to watch from the standpoint of, for the most part, they've been a top five team quality level this year, and yet it kind of feels like there's always waiting for the other shoe to drop with this group. And then, of course, this past week and a half has just been, I don't know if total panic mode is the right discussion, but it's like, we told you, this is what they are. And now you beat Alabama. And look, I thought just from watching it on TV, thought it was a pretty darn good environment last night. Obviously, anytime Tennessee can beat Alabama and anything, I mean, there was the guy in the stands that had the just like football sign on the whiteboard right that he brought with him. I mean, I thought pretty good environment, pretty good atmosphere. What does a win like this against the number one team in the country do for the fan base, who has been, I think, walking on eggshells with this team all year long, would be how I would describe it.
I feel like with Tennessee men's basketball in particular, there's a big like divide and like a debate that's always going, right? And it's like the one side is like, guys, have you ever paid attention to our program? Like, Rick Barnes is the best coach we've ever had. And the other side, like, he doesn't win in the NCAA tournament. I don't care. It's garbage. And then whenever anything goes bad, it's like, see, there you go. So now it's like the I told you so's from like the Rick Barnes happies today,
Yeah.
But Ziegler had a good tweet. Somebody retweeted it into my timeline. It was like the video of Ja Morant where he's like, nah, you switched up. Just stay switched up.
Yeah.
So, he heard it, and those guys heard it. So, to me, I mean, look, I said last week, like, this is still a really good team, and they have not just the, like, they don't just have, like, the pieces. Now, okay, let's see. They now have beaten, I think these are three of the four projected number one seeds in the NCAA tournament. Texas, Alabama, Kansas. Beaten them all, okay? And you know, two on your home floor, and that's different than the tournament, but one on a neutral site, which was Kansas. This team has performance and ingredients that, like Jay Billis said it last night, this is absolutely a Final Four, you know, quality team. Hey, look, I wouldn't trust it either, but I think you should enjoy it and see what happens. And what a story it would be if, you know, if this is the team that gets Rick Barnes back to the Final Four 20 years after his only Final Four appearance back in 2003 with TJ Ford.
Well, now you mentioned it. I mean, you take down Alabama, which was, you know, on paper the toughest game that you've got, being the number one team in the country. But you have A&M coming up, you have Kentucky coming up, and if you could roll off a couple of wins there, then who knows what the conversation looks like with this Tennessee team. I mean, look, you're still not winning the SEC in the regular season. Like, Alabama's not losing three more times. It's just not going to happen. But you know, can you put yourself in a position throughout the rest of the regular season here and heading into the SEC tournament where you can start to creep back into, I don't know, two seed conversation, maybe one seed conversation? Is that still attainable for this team?
Yeah, if Tennessee goes and wins at Kentucky, which by the way, big win for Kentucky at Mississippi State last night. That's I mean, that's you know,
Yeah,
bubble teams.
I was shaking in my boots a little bit. A little stressed on that one.
Yeah, but that's I mean that's a big one in terms of them getting in. But if Tennessee goes and wins there on the road and at Texas A&M on the road, I think right now that win puts Tennessee on the two line again. I mean, in my opinion, but yeah, it's close. I mean, their profile at 20-6, they have, I think they have the best wins of anybody in the country. If they win the next two, then they're strong two seed and they are back right in there for the one. And you know, they basically would be probably playing for a one seed in Nashville.
615-737-1025. We're off and running today here on Robbie and Rex Road. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025. Big win for the Vols. We'll take your thoughts on that. We'll also get into the Titans and take a look at the coaching staff that Mike Vrabel has assembled, including another piece added to it a couple of days ago. All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook, live from our 1025 The Game studio, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Joe on the text line, Liam says some of those blocks and charges that went against Alabama late in the game were interesting. This from Liam on the text line. Maybe not necessarily agreeing with the blocking and the charging calls last night. We have our first Rex Road mute of the day.
Not this again. Sorry. Yeah, there was definitely one. I think Mayshak took it where I didn't like the call. It was, yeah, he really wasn't in position, and it was, you know, he flopped, and they gave him the call. I mean, look, the chart. I mean, so that one, I don't remember like a bunch of them that were bad. That one was bad. I mean, there's always going to be a little bit of home cooking, you know, I feel like, in big college basketball games in crazy environments. Also, college officials continue to go for flops way more than they should. I mean, it's an epidemic, man. So, but yeah, that one definitely stands out. Mayshak just kind of, you know, go ahead and, I mean, look, if I'm coaching in college basketball, I'm teaching flopping because it works, unfortunately.
Yeah, no question about it. So big win for Tennessee. We'll see if they can build on it when they take on A&M at Kentucky coming up, and maybe if this is a momentum booster for the Vols as they try to move forward here. Joe, switching gears to the Titans, they've made another addition to their coaching staff that we did not get to yesterday, but they've rounded out the coaching staff with hiring running back coach Justin Allen coming over from the Broncos. He was the offensive coordinator with the Broncos, and this is an example of bringing in somebody from the outside and adding them to your coaching staff. So we've talked about that a lot with Vrabel. Does he do that enough? Does he do that? Can he do that more moving forward? Well, he did it and has brought in Alton to be the running backs coach here with the Titans. So you've got him at running backs coach. We know about Tim Kelly at the offensive coordinator spot, Charles London coming in as well. And I saw a couple of tweets on Titans Twitter about this a few days ago when this was announced. And kind of the crux of the tweets were, all right, let's take a look at the coaching staff that's been assembled here. Like, has Mike Vrabel actually done a really good job, a little bit under the radar, with the coaching staff that he's put together, particularly on the offensive side of the ball so far this offseason? So what do you make of the newest hire for the Titans and the coaching staff offensively that Vrabel has put together as a whole?
Well, first of all, there's a lot of angles you could look at on the Alton thing. I mean, if I don't know if Jared has discussed this, but Justin Alton was the Packers tight ends coach. His work with Robert Tonyan, very, renowned. How much does Aaron Rodgers like Justin Alton? I don't know. I mean, we got Brinker in here. You got Alton in here. I mean, is every move just a big coordinated strike to get Aaron Rodgers? I mean, hey, I mean, I think it could fill some time on the radio.
For all we know, Justin Alton could be attending the darkness retreat with Rodgers later this week, maybe as soon as today.
Yeah, or at least maybe like being one of the people who shoves in the tray of food to him. You know, I mean, I assume he'll have an army of people who are, you know, supplying him with whatever he may need. But in all seriousness, this is an example of with Justin Alton and with Charles London, you're talking about two guys who had OC interest. I believe Alton was a serious consideration with the Ravens for that OC job, which of course goes to Todd Monken plucking him out of Georgia, taken away from Kirby Smart. But like you said, Robbie, one thing, the difference between these two, of course, London, Vrabel had the connection, had time together. Alton, there's no direct connection. He had previously, like, he was part of the Falcons, you know, like that Super Bowl team. He was an intern. That was his first NFL year. So he, you know, had experience, of course, with that offense, with the Shanahan offense. Shanahan was the OC that year and that great season. Then he's an offensive assistant before going to your beloved Packers. I don't know. Have you, like, as a Packers fan, have you sung the praises of the tight ends coach at any point in recent years?
I can't say that I have, although I will say, you know, Tunyon's had a couple of nice years, and Mercedes Lewis is the ageless wonder that continues to block well out there. So who knows? Maybe Alton laid the foundation for those two.
But what it did, of course, was it got him an OC job at a pretty young age. I mean, you're talking, you know, I guess he's 39. So, you know, he was 38 years old, gets the OC job with the Broncos. Now, there's where you get into, oh, the OC of the Broncos last year. Okay. Right. But, you know, look, for one thing, Hackett, like a lot of these guys, play calling head coach. So, so there is that. And I don't know. I mean, it didn't feel, you could look at this, I guess, and say, well, gee, the Titans had another, you know, of course it was an OC who, had 1 year as an OC previously. It was a disaster, but everybody blamed Downing back then. And I didn't hear a lot of blame for Alton. But the bottom line is you now have a guy who has had a chance to be an OC, has been an OC and is considered an OC by other teams. And then another guy. And so if, let's say, things go well and Tim Kelly, because if things go well, that means Tim Kelly at some point gets a head coaching opportunity, right? And that's basically what it means in this league. You now have two potential, you know, promotions internally that actually make sense.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it's the more I look at the coaching staff offensively, you know, we keep kind of talking about the word collaboration and what that means for the Titans. But, I mean, there are a lot of interesting names kind of in that building right now on the offensive side of the ball. First off, like moving some guys around, like Tony Dews going from running backs coach to tight ends coach is interesting. And then there's the Outen part bringing him in, London bringing him in as the passing game coordinator, but he's going to be working with quarterbacks. I mean, it's interesting the way that, I guess, number one, that they have shuffled the coaching staff. Number two, the roles that they have defined for the coaching staff. And it kind of feels like they've got a bunch of different guys in there that will collaborate, will have different ideas. And, you know, even Tim Kelly, he's been an OC before. You know, how different are things going to look with him in charge as the OC now? It's a really intriguing offensive staff to me. You know, obviously still the most important thing is the personnel and what decisions they make this offseason to do that. But I don't know, like, I've got an open mind on the Tim Kelly part of this with the offensive coordinator, and I kind of like the rest of the offensive staff that Vrabel's put together.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is loading up, and we've talked about Pat O'Hara. So I mentioned those two guys as possible OC, but now again, I think Tony Dews getting the tight ends job again. That is tight ends and O line. Those two jobs in particular often see, you know, promotion to OC. So now Dews has a stronger, you know, is in a stronger position. So Pat O'Hara, and by the way, you know, Luke Steckel interviewed for an OC job too, and now he's an analyst.
Yeah.
Even though Pat O'Hara, former QB coach, and Luke Steckel, former tight ends coach, I have to look at their new positions as demotions. I mean, I'm sure like Vrabel would probably be like, no, it's not a demotion. It's just we reorganize or whatever. But I would not think that they would be getting pay cuts, right?
I wouldn't think so.
I would not think so. So think about that. I mean, what this also says, all of this says, is that Amy Adams Strunk is like, here's the checkbook. What do you need to do, Mike? Right? I think this represents an absolute big influx of cash from her to try to improve the coaching staff.
Well, then she can toss a few more million on top of it when they make the push to go get Rodgers and really open up the checkbook.
Well, maybe we're headed toward that. Man, what if it does go that way? And it turns out that's all true. It's like Outen, Brinker, they're all just here to get Rodgers here. Well, it was never hear the end of it.
I did thoroughly enjoy listening to Jared's kind of bloviation about that yesterday. And then, like, Ian, you know, in the Ian way, just kind of softly gets on there and is like, doesn't that kind of seem extreme, though, to just go hire somebody to recruit Aaron Rodgers? It was awesome.
Yes, Ian very kindly sometimes needs to dunk on Jared.
615-737-1025. We'll continue the conversation on the Titans. Take more of your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning. Taking your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We've discussed the coaching staff that Mike Vrabel has put together this offseason. JD on the text line says, it seems like Vrabel is taking a Saban-esque approach to building the coaching staff. A Saban-esque approach. What do you think of that one?
I don't know if I'd go Saban. I mean, Saban-esque is the ultimate. You know, someone made this point this week, and I wish I could remember who. It may have been Ralph Russo from the AP. Speaking of Saban, you know, if Georgia is going to be the next Alabama or on the same level or whatever, if they're that level of program and sustaining it, then Kirby Smart is going to prove that he can just take whoever. Come on in. Here we go. We lost everybody. Yep, you're in here. We can just keep rolling. You know, Todd Monken was a huge loss for them. And Mike Bobo, I know some Georgia fans aren't thrilled about that. But the point being, you know, Saban-esque is like, that's the extreme of, oh, who's this hot shot? Yeah, come on in here. I'll give you, you be the OC for a year or two. You'll get a head coaching job. Oh, you're a fired coach. Come on in, Butch. Look, man, and listen, I like low starch, okay? Low starch, Butch, okay? You figure that out. We're going to get along just fine, buddy. But I mean, the Saban-esque is to me is like the ultimate. Somehow, it just keeps being a machine with constantly moving parts. And again, college football different than pro football because also Saban-esque means he has the best players every week. But I'd will at least for Vrabel, you know, this is I guess in Saban terms, Saban is definitely at the forefront of expanding staffs, right?
Yeah.
And this is definitely Vrabel. I mean, to me, talking Amy Adams Strunk into let's have more people here who we pay as full-time coaches and have more eyeballs on it, more collaboration, and just more manpower on trying to, in particular, have a better offense.
Wes in Clarksville on the text line says, I guess we'll see another concession price increase for all these new hires. This is from Wes in Clarksville on the text line.
Sorry, I'm causing a panic of people who are like, oh my God, what does this mean for me?
Well, we've hired Justin Outen as our running backs coach, and now this beer will cost you $33. Thank you.
I wonder if the Titans do the Falcons thing with the new stadium and have cheap concessions. I
Don't
say
know.
some public pressure needs to be applied, huh?
Maybe so.
That's gone over pretty well in Atlanta. But yeah, look, talk about investment from Amy Adams Strong, you know, in bigger staff. Look, I don't suppose that Chad Brinker, you know, Jared yesterday speculating, which again is just makes the his argument just hilarious that he's just in here for some intel on Aaron Rodgers. But you know what, 800K maybe 3-4 year deal. I mean, that sounds like probably about right. Like number two in a personnel staff, probably close to $1 million a year, right in there. So that's, you know, a significant investment. I mean, is that going to be a bigger staff in terms of, I think there's going to be more formalized analytics. I assume that probably means higher salary too. Typically it would. So you're talking about some investment. Yeah. So who's paying for this, guys? Who's paying for this?
So if you're a Broncos fan out there, you're taking a look, and Hackett has gone to the Jets. He's now the OC at the Jets. Outen is now the running backs coach with the Titans. Look, obviously, if you're a Broncos fan, you're excited that Sean Payton is there, and you're hoping that he can come in and rescue Russell Wilson and salvage the rest of this contract, and that they can get to be in the team that they thought they were going to be last year when Russell Wilson was there. But how are you viewing the Titans? How are you viewing the Jets? What are you thinking about the moves that have been made with former Broncos coaching staff members this offseason?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not on, you know, Broncos Twitter, and frankly, I'm not going to be. But I'm sure there was a lot of the same kind of reaction. I don't know. Maybe did Hackett just get blamed for anything? I'm sure that Justin Outen got his share of blame for just the awfulness of that offense last year. So I'm sure there's a fair amount of Broncos Twitter pointing and laughing at the Titans. Now, you know, and because basically it's the same. I mean, everybody's a something coordinator now, right? You know, I mean,
Right.
Downey is a pass game coordinator. Out here is a run game coordinator. I'm sure there's some of that. And in both cases, again, I'm probably, I mean, I think I've come to the conclusion that I'm probably the biggest Downing defender in town. I don't know what that says about me. Maybe I'm not. If there's somebody else, I don't think that he's like a complete buffoon, you know, which makes me a strong defender of him. But obviously a lot of people do. Like, you know, I mean, even Kaharski brought up a fair point yesterday. You know, like how do you know, when you have this kind of performance, how do you know, then get that kind of opportunity? But again, I mean, to me, what it says is that a lot of people in the league look at the Titans last year and say, man, what are you going to do with that personal situation? Both the terrible trade of AJ Brown and then also the O-line, the injuries, all that. But anyway, I think an open mind is probably a good thing with Outen here. You know, Sam Phelan wrote a good piece at A to Z Sports. I didn't know this, but he last two games, it makes sense, but Hackett gets fired, you know, because Hackett can't even make it through a year. And he did call the plays the last two games of the years for the record. So that would be a 24 and a 31 point output against the Chiefs and Chargers, by the way. So maybe They just needed to have Justin Outen as OC, as a play calling OC all year, and all would be well, and they'd all still be in Denver together.
Well, for that offense, that was an offensive explosion, just like it would have been for the Titans. So good stuff there from Outen on that front. I think my biggest takeaway from what you just said there was Joe Rexroad, defender of Todd Downing and Jerry Stackhouse, attacker of Michael Jordan and Tom Brady. We like it.
I don't attack them at all. I'm just trying to balance the conversation. Yeah. I'm sorry. People don't think Michael Jordan ever missed a shot. I swear. He did. I'm just telling.
Wait, he
Yeah.
did, Joe?
Yes. And maybe I'll put together a highlight reel of his late game misses where he wasn't clutch, because it happens to everyone who are human beings.
Zach from Nashville on the text line says the counterpoint to the Stillmanics, I like that. The counterpoint to the Stillmanics on Brinker slash Rodgers is that it's a very, very good chance Brinker says to them, "You don't want this headache." He's on his last year or two. He's indecisive drama. He's awful to deal with. He probably is thoroughly happy to be away from Rodgers from a front office point of view. In fact, the front office staff seems over his antics as well. This is from Zach from Nashville on the text line.
Well, the thing about the whole Brinker thing is, I mean, wouldn't Outen be a better source of information on Rodgers anyway?
You would think.
I mean,
But he's
Outen's
acting as a
actually in,
coach with him.
yeah, he's in the locker room. He's actually on the practice field. He's right. I mean, the assistant GM certainly like knows the players, but like there's way more involvement on a day-to-day basis with a guy like Justin Outen with Aaron Rodgers than Chad Brinker, which just makes Stillman's thing all the more stupid. But it's also interesting with Outen, of course, very much a LaFleur guy, right? I mean, he comes in to the league and he's an intern. Look, he's with LaFleur, you know, he's with the Falcons still as LaFleur goes to LA and then to Tennessee, and then LaFleur brings him with him, right when LaFleur gets that head coaching job in 19. He brings in Outen to be his tight ends coach. So he this is a LaFleur guy now coming in with Vrabel. So maybe Vrabel likes LaFleur more than we think.
Well, maybe so. Kelton
They're
on the
all
text line.
friends. They're all
They're
friends.
all best buds. Kelton on the text line says, "I actually think Russell was bad. I watched a lot of their games. He wasn't very good. I'm not sure if Peyton can get the old Russ back to form. We'll see. I'm more optimistic for the Titans." This is from Kelton on the text line.
I think Russ was bad too, but I think Hackett was a bad head coach. So, but look, I mean, bottom line is, Outen is one of those guys who in this league has been a pretty fast riser. You're talking about, a guy who really was all high school coach for a long time in Texas, you know, before getting into the NFL with that internship with the Atlanta in 2016. So, but it's been a pretty fast rise. And so now he's just another mind to plug into this situation, which you just don't often see. Like running backs coach is kind of, you know, I mean, in a lot of cases, that's a lot of times it's like a younger person on a staff who you kind of start there. You know what I mean? So this is like, much this is someone with a lot more of a background than usually you'll see at a running backs coach. And of course, he is also a run game coordinator. Let's remember that.
He is the run game coordinator. 615-737-1025. We'll continue to take more of your thoughts on the Titans. We've discussed the coaching staff. What will this mean for the Titans offense once they take the field? We'll get into that coming up next. If you screwed it up Valentine's Day this week, 102.5 The Game and Green Trees Company have your chance to make it up. Make sure you tune into the Chase and Michelle show tomorrow for your last chance to win tickets to see Adam Sandler at Bridgestone Arena, courtesy of Green Trees Company in Hendersonville. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. So, Joe, we've discussed the offensive coaching staff moves that Mike Vrabel and the Titans have made so far this offseason. And now the question is, what will it mean for the Titans on the field? I think it's clear that Amy Adams-Strunk, Mike Vrabel, wherever you want to talk about, recognize that what went down offensively this past season was not close to good enough, and there are several different reasons that we can point to for that. Obviously, the most important factor in what the offense is going to look like next year are the personnel decisions that they make this offseason, and we don't yet know what those are. But with the coaching staff that they put together, with Tim Kelly coming in as offensive coordinator, you know, how much different will it look? And specifically, I'm interested, Joe, with Derrick Henry, because I think you and I would both agree that Derrick Henry is going to be back next year. I'd be surprised at this point if he wasn't. You know, we talked about Rand Carthon's comments on Derrick Henry after that. Look, Derrick Henry ran for over 1,500 yards last year. He had a lot of carries. That wasn't 400-and-something carries like he was on pace for a couple of years ago. He got a lot of carries. He is 29. I'm really interested to see what it looks like from him moving forward, because it feels like we always kind of have like either the workload conversation with Derrick Henry or the wear and tear conversation with Derrick Henry, and I get it. But now that he's getting closer to being 30 and he does have the mileage that he's logged, I do wonder what this looks like, what the philosophy looks like, and what maybe the coaching staff changes could mean for him as they move into their plan of attack offensively next year.
Yeah, it's a great question. And before I get into that, I'd like to break some news that kind of relates to what we've been talking about this hour.
Okay.
Did you see who Saban just hired?
I did not.
Ken Whisenhunt, special assistant to the head coach, my friends.
Good Lord.
Congratulations, Alabama 2023 national champions. Incredible. You may have lost to Tennessee last night, and you won't be number one for long in hoops. But by golly, Ken Whisenhunt, the Whisenator, is in. That's fantastic. Saban will seriously just take anyone and just put them through the spin cycle and spit them out, and then he'll be like a head coach in 2 years.
Imagine Whisenhunt going to the grocery store to pick up some oatmeal cream pies for Saban, just stocking the stocking the pantry for him.
You know, Butch used to stack those up on the left side of my desk. A little better than you do there, Ken. Let's work on that.
Yeah, Butch already had that experience of like stacking those bricks, and I just told him to do the same thing with the oatmeal cream pies.
Oh God, that's awesome. Wow, that's amazing. What an interesting hour talking about Alabama sports. Yeah, but yes. on the Titans front, no, I'm fascinated to see, because I'm with you. Derrick Henry is going to be back unless, you know, Derrick Henry's part of some big trade or something like that. You know, I mean, other than that, I think Derrick Henry's going to be back last year of his deal, and he should be back, and he should be. He's still a fantastic weapon to have. Imagine Derrick Henry with a better offensive line. Imagine Derrick Henry with a passing game that functions well enough to, you know, to keep defenses off balance. That's the challenge of the Titans, is to put those things around him. And then, you know, I do believe it's just interesting. Like, are they looking at it like, hey, he's carrying the mail. It's still built around him. Or is it, he's more of a, you know, more of a, not, I don't want to say support piece or like role player. He's going to be a key player, but maybe are they a little bit less geared around him next year? I think if they could be, it would be good.
Well, and I'm interested to see, you know, what do they do at running back beyond him? Like, is Dontrell Hilliard coming back next year? If not, how do you replace that? And what do they think of Hassan Haskins? I mean, they spent a fourth-round pick on Hassan Haskins last year. And I do think, you know, given Derrick Henry some break and actually carrying the football every now and then, maybe wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. I do wonder, like, I assume Haskins is going to be on the team, but what do they think of him in terms of his ability to carry the football and take a carry or two here and there away from Derrick Henry next year?
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting there. I mean, I think if you know, the next stuff can be troubling, right? But I think if all is clear, I think Hilliard back would totally make sense for the Titans. And then you spent a significant pick on Haskins. Previously, you spent a significant pick on a guy whose name is already eluding me, who was supposed to be a big difference maker and could never get healthy.
Darrington Evans.
Thank you. And Julius Chestnut, as I sit here, I'm no running backs coach or running back or anything, but as I watch Chestnut and Haskins play, not sure that Chestnut isn't better than Haskins. So, and then, you could make the case. I mean, you could make the case that they need to think about, like, down the road, they need to think about who is next, if they don't believe, like, either of those guys is what you're looking for in, a primary back. So that is going to be very interesting.
Well, and then the Derrick Henry part of it, I mean, can with an offensive line, let's say you go out and you improve your offensive line. We've talked about, well, what will that mean for Ryan Tannehill? What would that mean for the offense trying to pass the ball? And that's, that's what we just naturally think of when we think of offensive line as protecting the quarterback. I would, in retrospect, Joe, it is kind of amazing, given the state of this offensive line this past year, that Derrick Henry ran for over 1,500 yards. Like, it really is. Just because of – I mean, did you see who he had out there blocking for him? Like, it's kind of unreal that happened. So, I am curious. Like, I know he's older. I know that – I think you and I would both agree he probably is not, peak-level Derrick Henry with the burst and explosiveness anymore. He still looked pretty darn good last year. If you fix the offensive line, or at least fix it enough, what could he do with a better offensive line next season running the ball?
Yeah, and that's the thing too. It's like it is remarkable that he had the year he had. I mean, it's 2 yards less than the breakout 2019 season, which of course then he dominates in the playoffs that year. Two yards less. Now, granted, it's 46 more carries. So, 4 per carry kind of speaks to, we saw a lot of runs that were just, that were dead from the start. But imagine if he had, if he had that gear, that it does look like that highest gear eluded him last year. And that's why some of those runs that were like, 30-yarder, 40-yarder, that in the past might have been a 60, 70, 80-yarder. Imagine if he finished some of those runs.
Yeah.
What the numbers would have been. But it's you look at his, I mean, my gosh, he's so you break the foot at 937 yards, or else we'd be talking about a guy going for his sixth straight 1,000-yard season, which is very rare in the NFL. But the whole thing of last year to me, with all of the struggles they had, even with that top gear gone, he's still what? I mean, how many running backs would you take over Derrick Henry? Unless it's just like, no, I don't want, I want, the pass catcher first in the backfield guy. But I mean, as a runner of the football, who would you take over him right now? I still think it's a very short list for most people around the league.
Yeah, I mean, the list may be zero. Like, I don't know. Like, it depends on who you ask on that front. Jared from Spring Hill on the text line says, Derek needs to be a situational back now. Preserve him for the end of the season in short yardage. Let's draft Gibbs or Robinson in the second, who can do some more work out of the backfield. Hilliard's not a long-term answer. Haskins is Derek, but with no size, the dude can't catch. This from Jared from Spring Hill on the text line.
So what the heck are you doing about your offensive line and receiving core and edge? And Jahmyr Gibbs is fascinating to me. I think Bijan Robinson is going to go possibly high in this draft.
He's going to first round.
Yeah. I mean, Dane Brugler put him in his top 10 prospects the other day. And I was like, wow, you just don't see that a ton, running backs. But I mean, Jahmyr Gibbs, he's dazzling. I can't wait to see him in the NFL. How could you do that if you're the Titans? Like, how could you seriously entertain a back there given all of the issues you have? And we don't know. We're talking draft now without knowing what they're going to do in free agency, but still, I can't see it.
Well, if they were going to draft the back in the second round, you're probably not bringing Derrick Henry back, right? Like, if you're drafting a running back in the second round, that tells me that you think that he's ready to come in and start for you right now. Like, it's just the nature of the position in the NFL, unless you just think he's an absolute stud and I guess starting next year could be your running back of the future. But I just, that doesn't make sense to me otherwise.
Yeah, running backs, they don't need a year. And I'm not paying 8 figures for a situational,
Right.
short yardage back. That's not what he is. He's much better than that. I mean, if you're paying him that money, the last year of his deal, it's for him to be a key part of the offense.
Coming up next, we will switch gears and get into the Predators. Some interesting comments from Elliot Friedman on the Jeff Merrick podcast about the Predators, the selling conversation that David Poile talked about on our show the other day, and how it could relate to a Predators defenseman that is no stranger to trade rumors. We'll get into all that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.